You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes!
That boy's good.
And Marcus Vandenberg.
West side!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
Down with the King for years, about 10 of them.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime, the world-traveling, globe-trotting journalist extraordinaire, Marcus Vandenberg. What's going on, brother?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Doing pretty good, man. It's been a week since we talked last. I mean, at least on air. Y'all don't need to know about our personal conversations where we talk shit about each and every one of you behind your back. that's a terrible way to start the show, isn't it?
It's the truth, though.
Yeah, you know, we're going to keep it 100. But seriously, it's been a week, so I know, you know, a lot of stuff's been going on in Marcus Vandenberg's life, and not much been going on in my life. Same old, status quo, if you will. But how was your week, man?
It's been a good week. So this week, in the latest adventures of Vandy, Sunday night I went to the Jake the Snake documentary. They had a screening out here in Los Angeles, so I went to that. Before we got inside to the movie theater, I look over to my right, and who do I see? David Arquette.
Did you walk up and talk to your fellow unicorn?
I did not. Mr. Arquette appeared to be, how do I put this? Maybe possibly not of his right.
I'll say everybody in the club getting tipsy.
Yeah, he might have been a little, you know, something. Something was going on. So I did not bother David Arquette. But he did bring a replica title with him.
Really?
Yeah, like not even like the fake good ones, like the fake ones you buy at Toys R Us.
So he is still hanging on to that gimmick.
He is. So David Arquette was there. Diamond Dallas Page was there.
Okay.
Edge was there. Rob Van Dam.
Really?
John Morrison. And I think that might be it in terms of the wrestlers. But yeah, it was a good turnout.
Cool. So what'd you think of the movie?
It was very good. I mean, if anyone has gone through addiction, I have not personally. But if you have, it's really an inspiring story. It starts off basically when Jake was at rock bottom almost 3 years ago now, and it follows his journey into DDP's house, and then also the story. The documentary also intertwines Scott Hall's involvement of him joining the house as well, so there's a little bit that is focused on Scott. So it's okay. It's a really good documentary, and cool. Really sad at times, too. You see just how much alcohol can really wreck someone's lives, and just what kind of control alcohol has. And, you know, there, you could tell Jake wanted to stop drinking, but there was something inside of him that told him he needed to drink. So, it was really interesting.
That sounds very cool. I'm gonna have to check that out, but I'm gonna need you to not talk about the disease of alcoholism while I'm enjoying a beer myself, Marcus. Make me feel bad.
Do we need to get you help, Nate?
Do I need to go into the DDP house?
That'd be funny. just to watch you do yoga would be funny.
Oh, that would be That'd be an interesting thing. What was I watching? This is a while back, because I actually did try, full disclosure, I did try DDP yoga back when it was called YRG, when it was yoga for regular guys. And I had looked up some stuff, and I did, like, you know, the first couple of exercises, and it was okay, it was cool. But I had gone online to check out some stuff, and it showed DDP with all these celebrities, and it was him and I think Carney Wilson.
Oh.
From Wilson Phillips. And yeah, and DDP did the thing where, you know, he goes into the people's house, and the first thing he does is see what's in their refrigerator.
I can only imagine for her.
Yeah, man. And he opened Carney Wilson's refrigerator, and it was just like nothing but ham hocks and chicken and sweets and fatty foods. And my man brought a trash bag in and literally threw out half of the stuff that was in the refrigerator.
Damn.
Yeah. And all she could do was sit there and just watch. So shout out to DDP, doing big things.
Yeah, he's pushing 60. He looks great.
He's about to open at the Performance Center in Atlanta.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, he's opening up his own DDP Yoga Performance Center, and he certified people like Stevie Richards and. Glacier, remember Glacier from WCW?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
A former football player, and I guess, you know, Glacier got into the DDP yoga, Stevie Richards and a couple other wrestlers and a couple other his friends, and he's opening up a performance center to not only teach yoga, but also to, you know, teach the lifestyle changes that he kind of does in the house.
Huh, very cool.
So, yeah, I'd definitely be interested to check that out once it gets off the ground. So, shout out to DDP again.
Yeah, but, so that was my Sunday, and then
I was gonna say, what else did you do? Because I know whenever we ask you about your week, it's like one of those old twist of plot books, because there's turns and twists and turns everywhere.
Nothing Monday, nothing Tuesday, but Wednesday, I attended the Floyd Mayweather Manny Pacquiao press conference in Los Angeles, and let me tell you, if that's the press conference for this fight, I can only imagine what the media will be for the actual fight itself, because I was one of 700 credentialed media for this thing.
Wow. Complete
with a red carpet that could have matched any Oscars or Grammys or anything like that.
So you walked down the red carpet?
I walked down the other side of the red carpet to avoid the media circus.
They'd be like, nigga, is that El DeBarge?
But yeah, this was a grand production for a fight that doesn't really need much selling. So,
yeah.
The actual press conference itself was pretty standard. Pacquiao spent more time on his phone than paying attention to what was going on. I found that fascinating. But, you know, both fighters kept it clean. They didn't, you know, just no bad blood between Manny and Floyd. I think they know there's a lot of money to be made, so there's no need to, you know, call names or anything like that. But I did run into a fellow podcaster, Jalen Rose.
Ah, okay. How was Jay Rose doing?
He's good. My fiance is a big Jalen Rose fan. So when I saw him, I said, all right, I gotta at least say something to him. And I wanted to take a picture of him, just of him, to send to her. And he goes, well, anyone can do that. Just, you know, why don't you get in the photo? So I got in the photo and took a picture with him.
Okay. So was this the first time you met him?
First time you met him. Second time we've seen him. The first time I was with her and we saw Jalen in person. And I said, hey, look, it's Jalen Rose. We were at a movie screening for, remember when the 30 for 30 when Magic Johnson came out?
Yeah,
so they had a screening for that, so we went to that, and Jalen was there, and I said, hey, you know, Jalen, go talk to him, and she got cold feet, and she never talked to him, so I saw him today, and I figured I should say something. So in terms of people she liked, I would say Jalen Rose, Genuine, and the Bella Twins are probably 1, 2, and 3.
Wow, that is a random group.
And I have now met Jalen Rose and the Bella Twins, and I've pissed off Genuine, so I've pretty much done the trifecta.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So How'd she get into Jalen Rose? Was she a fan of the Fab Five back in the day, or?
I just think she thought, you know, he was cute back on the Bulls and, you know, when he was in the NBA.
Okay. Yeah, he's got a great podcast. It's probably one of my favorite sports podcasts to listen to.
Yeah, he's very good. He's really made that transition from basketball player to media. He's probably done it one of the best transitions from pro athlete to now media member.
It's funny because if you look back at that team, like, he'd probably be one of the guys that you would say, I think Jalen's probably the least likely to be a broadcaster just because he was a little rough around the edges. But man, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he is. Nice guy.
That's cool. So, shout out to Jalen Rose, podcast love. But, so that was your big week. What was your big takeaway from the press conference?
Big takeaway was, wow, this fight's actually happening. And I am curious to see what the actual numbers will be in terms of pay-per-view. They haven't set a price yet. They're still going back and forth on that. But I don't think it's going to be over $100. That might mean it's $99.95, but I don't think they can crack that $100 barrier. And I'm just curious to see, you know, once we get closer to the fight, I mean, do you plan on watching the fight somewhere?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, if I don't order it myself, you know, I'll head to a friend's or head to the bar. And because as we've established, I've got some issues DDP needs to help me with. But yeah, I'm definitely going to be watching the fight. Like, anybody that says they're not interested or this should have happened 5 years ago, like, they're lying, because when that bell rings, most eyes in America will be on that fight.
I think that's going to be like a fun Saturday, sort of like the unofficial kickoff the summer. You know, forget Memorial Day. I think between everything going on, between the fight and the derby, in the playoffs, and hopefully the weather's nice across the country, that I think that'll start, you know, getting us in that summer spirit.
Cool. Yeah, I think it's gonna be a really cool event, and yeah, it's gonna be exciting. Something that people have been wanting to see for a while, and now it's finally getting to happen, Marcus. But there's a part of this show that people wait to listen to for a while, and I think you know what it is.
I do.
Much like Jalen Rose. Every week on the Jalen Rose podcast says you got to give the people what they want. Marcus, it's time for you to give our listeners, Kings of Sport Nation, what they want. And what they want is Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro. Somebody hit Marcus's music.
It's time for the segment that's cooler than a polar bear's toenail.
Here's the puck to Seth Jones. Leg one for Jones.
It's Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro.
All right. You're going to learn today.
Thank you. Back this week for another Hockey Minute. And this one I'm going to spend this time to pimp a story that I edited last night from our writer Eric Adelson, who was at the final Rangers-Islanders game at Nassau Coliseum on Tuesday night. And the basis of his story was that, you know, New York needs one last playoff series between these two teams. But I am, as you know, a Kings fan, but I do hold a special place for the Islanders since I went to college literally across the street from Nassau Coliseum at Hofstra. And Nassau is a piece of shit building. It's probably the worst arena I've been to ever. And the Islanders are leaving Long Island to move to Brooklyn next year. So this is their swan song in Long Island. And, you know, coming into the season, they were not expected to do well, but they are 1 point, I believe, out of the top spot in the National Hockey League. And, yeah, check out the story. It's sort of playoff focused, and we're almost at that time of the season where we are at the playoffs and the time where Nate maybe, just maybe, will pay attention to hockey. Maybe.
It might be fourth or fifth on the list.
Ooh, fourth or fifth.
I mean, you know, NBA and baseball and will the NFL be up by then?
NFL draft?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, wrestling, so yeah.
Oh, but, okay, all right, here we go. Here's the true test. NHL playoffs or post-WrestleMania WWE?
Oh. I might have to go NHL playoffs. Because outside of that, outside of the first Raw, the night after WrestleMania, yeah. it's all downhill.
Because if you thought the build now to, if you thought wrestling was bad now on WWE, wait till after WrestleMania when they really don't give a fuck. So, yeah, it's going to drop off even more.
Yeah, so I might get interested in hockey then.
Cool. Yeah, so check it out. You know, Rangers were in the Stanley Cup final last year against the Kings. Speaking of which, you know it never happened, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where's our payoff for this bet?
Yeah, Bill. We know you're listening, Bill, from the Mr. Throwback Thursday podcast, which you can also find on the High Voltage Radio Network.
Bill, what's up? I mean, it's been almost a year now. No payoff.
Yeah, Bill. Game recognized game, Bill Winters. And right now, you looking really unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to have to, because I know Bill listens, and I also know that I think Bill was in our March Madness pool last year, so we're going to start that up again. So, yeah, he's going to hear from us.
Yeah. So, just for that, let's go Islanders, just to piss him off.
Yeah, that's a fitting hockey minute right there. Yeah, Bill, we know you out there, Bill. Pay what you owe, Bill. Pay what you owe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but speaking of getting paid, Marcus, you know who got paid this week?
A lot of people.
A lot of people. And, of course, we're talking about NFL free agency, which is now in full effect. And, you know, a lot of shows that you can listen to on your radio dial or on iTunes or on Stitcher, they'll break down what's going on in the contracts and how this will help this team and this will help that team. And that's all well and good. But here at the Kings of Sport, we like to do things our own way. And, Marcus, I have come up with a game for us to discuss the NFL free agency.
Okay.
Now, this is a game. It's not my creation. I'm borrowing it. So I'm going to give all credit to 103 Jams, WOWI Radio down here in Hampton Roads. And basically, they're the quote-unquote urban station. So you know what that means. when back in the day when I was in high school, they used to have a segment every night when they would debut a new song. And the segment was called Slam It or Jam It. And basically, they play the song, and then they would take calls for the next 10, 15 minutes. And if you like the song, you say jam it. If you hate the song, you say slam it. And popular opinion ruled on whether they played that song again or not.
Okay.
So we're going to do that with the NFL free agency moves. And I'm going to be the host of this game show, of this concept that I came up with that I stole from 103 Jams. And Marcus, you are going to be the participant. And I even came up with some nifty theme music for this contest. So whoever's back there in the sound truck, could you play track 32? Yeah, the Slam It or Jam It. All right, it's a game we call Slam It or Jam It.
Yo, stop. Are y'all ready for the jam? I said, are y'all ready for the jam? Yo, G, kick it.
Jam. Oh, jam. Jam, titty jam for me, yeah.
It's time for America's favorite sports-based urban opinion game. It's Slam It or Jam It on the Kings of Sports.
If that makes me the urban calling person, I need a more urban name than Marcus.
Yeah. What's your middle name?
William.
Willie. It's Willie Vandenberg.
All right.
From the West Side. West Side Willie. Oh, all right, Marcus. I've got 7 free agency transactions, and for each transaction, I want you to slam it, which means you don't like the move, or jam it, which means that you approve of the move.
Okay.
All right. The first one, I'm going to give you an easy one, a layup, if you will. As your New York Jets signed Darrell Revis to a huge 5-year deal, Marcus Vandenberg, slam it or jam it?
This is a tough one. I'm going to say slam it. This contract, this is a lot of money for a guy who is now pushing 30, and while he's still a top 3 cornerback, that's a lot of money. Now, granted, the Jets do have the money to spend, but you know, when you're looking at year 3 of this contract, and you're wondering, is it worth paying this dude, or is it time to cut bait? I think that conversation might come up a couple years from now. So, short term, jam it. Long term, slam it.
Okay, that one actually surprised me. I thought you were going to be 100% all in on that one.
That's a lot of money.
All right. Well, let's go to another guy that got a lot of money and will not have to pay state property tax either. And he's also in the AFC East. The Miami Dolphins signed Ndamukong Suh. Marcus Vandenberg, slam it or jam it?
Jam it. And, you know, also you mentioned big contract, but this contract is structured a little differently. He's got a huge signing bonus that he's getting, but actually his first year with the Dolphins, he's making less than $1 million. His second year goes up to an outrageous amount, I think over $20 million. But for that first year, he's making less than $1 million. Then he goes up, and then I think year 3 is $10 million. So I can see a situation where, you know, just in case this is a Albert Haynesworth situation where it's just not working out in Miami, they can cut bait, but they're on the hook for at least a good $60 million of that 114. So that's more than half, but I think he can be a key asset to that Miami team that, you know, last year they were pretty impressive. Tannehill really developed as a quarterback, and I think Sue will help that defense next season.
I agree, and I think the maybe the most important part of that signing is we saw for years how Sue and that Detroit defense affected Aaron Rodgers, and in the AFC East, obviously, everybody's gunning for the Patriots, and I think he could really do some damage against Tom Brady, so I think that's a good signing. All right, Marcus, let's go next. We got a twofer here. The Indianapolis Colts signed running back Frank Gore and wide receiver Andre Johnson. Marcus Vandenberg, slam it or jam it?
Jam it. I really like this deal. Yes, Gore is now 32, I believe. But considering what Andrew Luck had last season at running back, this will be a definite upgrade for the short term. And Andre Johnson, you're placing Andre Johnson with Wayne with Andre Johnson. So I think Andre has something left to prove. I think the fact that he's still in the same division as the Houston Texans will be fascinating to watch play out because they'll have to play each other next season. And I think he has something to prove. I think he's really going to be upset about this whole decision that Houston wanted to get rid of him. You know, we've talked about Andrew Luck. I know where you stand with Andrew Luck. You think he's a bit overrated. Am I right?
Yeah, just a smidge.
Well, I think this will be the year that he makes that next leap into superstardom with now a proven running back, assuming he stays healthy, because you never know with a guy like Frank Gore, who's had a bunch of miles on him, and another talented receiver in Andre Johnson.
Yeah, I agree, and as much as I may think that Luck is a bit overrated, I do think by far this is the best quarterback Andre Johnson's ever had.
Oh, easily.
All right. The next one, Marcus, we've got a two-part slam it or jam it. We're going to examine maybe the biggest trade that has occurred so far as the Philadelphia Eagles and the mad scientist Chip Kelly traded Nick Foles in a 4th-round pick to the St. Louis Rams and acquired Sam Bradford and a 5th-round pick in return. Marcus, slam it or jam it for both teams.
I'm going to go jam with both teams. I think the Eagles are up to something. I don't think Sam Bradford will be on the roster by the time the season starts. I think he will be a key asset into the Eagles trying to move up in the draft. Chip Kelly addressed the media today, and he said he's not going after Mariota. I'm not buying it. I think he's going to try to convince some team to take Bradford and maybe a first-round pick this year and a first-round pick next year to move up. So, in that sense, if he's able to flip Bradford for something else, I'm buying. I'm jamming it. And for St. Louis, you have a guy, Nick Foles, who was injured at the end of last season, but considering Bradford has been hurt majority of the last two seasons, I think Foles would be an upgrade for them. I'm not too concerned about the whole broken collarbone thing. That was sort of a fluke injury for him. And, the Rams do have talent at running back now, Trey Mason and Zach Stacy. They have a young receiving core. So I think now in Nick Foles, they will be able to sort of improve off last season.
Okay, I agree with you with the Chip Kelly thing. I don't think his end goal is to have Sam Bradford as a starting quarterback on opening day. I think if he wants to run that system, obviously the best guy equipped to run that system, at least from his standpoint, is Mariota. So I think that's the move they're going to make. So and Sam Bradford, I think Sam Bradford's a good quarterback. He's just too injury prone.
Yeah.
Like that's the knock on him, and like he just can't get right. So let's go to another trade, and I want you to slam it or jam it for both teams. The Saints trade arguably the best tight end in the game when he's healthy, Jimmy Graham, to Seattle for Pro Bowl center Max Unger. Marcus, slam it or jam it for both teams.
Saints, slam it. Seahawks, jam it times a thousand. I don't know how they pulled this off. I can only imagine how happy Russell Wilson was, because I know how pissed Drew Brees seems to be right now. If you were to say last season, when this whole contract situation went with Jimmy Graham, that a year later he'd be out in New Orleans, I would say no way. But that's the case now, and I think that Seattle offense now with Lynch returning and a legit number one target in Jimmy Graham is something they've never had in Seattle. I mean, Percy Harvin was there for a minute, but he was always hurt. Doug Baldwin is not a true number one target. I think now that Wilson has Jimmy Graham to throw to, I think we're going to see a new and improved Seattle offense. So another return trip to Super Bowl wouldn't surprise me at this rate.
Yeah, I really like this move for Seattle. It's like Jimmy Graham, yeah, he was a bit nicked up last year, and I can tell you because I had him on my fantasy team, but he still, what did he have, like 60, 70 receptions and 10 touchdowns?
Yeah, and that's a bad year for him.
Yeah, so I think this is a great move, especially as you have a quarterback in Russell Wilson that continues to develop. We got two more for you. The 49ers sign defensive end Darnell Dockett. Marcus Vandenberg, slam it or jam it.
Well, I'm going to slam it just on the fact that the 49ers are just a complete dumpster fire at the moment. And at this point, I don't care who they sign. It's not going to make much of a difference for this team, I don't think. I think that was Monday when everything went haywire with them.
We had the Kaepernick rumors and
Patrick Willis retired. Justin Smith retired. Bruce Miller got arrested for domestic assault. It was just one after another. And they did acquire Torrey Smith. He's not on the list, is he?
No, he's not on the list.
So they did sign Torrey Smith at receiver. And now Darnell Dockett. I think it's a fine signing, but it's not enough to replace what they're losing out on this offseason.
All right, Marcus. We've got one more. And this player is a game changer. This player is someone who can shift the whole culture of your team.
Oh, no.
The San Diego Chargers signed wide receiver and kick returner Jacoby Jones. Marcus Vandenberg, slam it or jam it.
Well, if you play in our stupid fantasy league, it's a jam it. in terms of regular actual football,
It's not one of the options, Mark. Slam it or jam it.
It's not even worth the response. It's Jacoby Jones. He's not even worthy of a slam it or jam it.
Wow. Think you're disrespecting this man. I don't appreciate the way you kind of hijacked this game to disrespect Jacoby Jones.
I'm sure he's a fine individual. Nothing personal. But he's Jacoby Jones. I mean,
about to give you a new nickname. You the palm tree because you're throwing a lot of shade right now, Marcus.
Hey, you know, no hard feelings.
Well, that is slam it or jam it. Marcus Vandenberg gave you his opinions on the NFL free agent transactions. I tend to agree with most of them. I think that, you know, there are still some intriguing components still out there. Probably DeMarco Murray being the chief among them. Where do you see DeMarco going real quick, Marcus?
Before we discuss DeMarco, here's your Jacoby Jones quote just to make you happy. He was asked about being a return specialist. "I don't think twice about it," he said last week. "I'm just doing it 100 miles per hour. Either you're going to kill me or you miss me. You've got to be fearless. My old college coach told me you have to be a fast fool. So I guess I'm a fast fool." So there you go, fool. Enjoy San Diego. Don't get hit. As for DeMarco, at the time of this taping on Wednesday night, the rumor is now he's going to visit the Eagles on Thursday. It would make sense considering they're out with a running back with McCoy and Buffalo and Frank Gore backing out on them. So that would be quite the pickup for Philadelphia if they were able to land DeMarco from the rival Cowboys.
Yeah, that would be crazy. I know the Raiders were also rumored. I think that would be
hilarious.
stay away, man. Stay away. But I think Dallas is probably still the best spot for him. I just don't know if Dallas really wants him. Like they're playing this game with him. Like, you know, hey, you know, he's a great player and all this other stuff. But, you know, you've been in relationships before, Marcus.
I'm trying to remember. Yep.
Yeah, you know how, I'm not talking about this one. I'm talking about previous ones. You know how sometimes you'll be in a relationship and sometimes you get to a point where you're both checked out, but you still hanging on a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where DeMarco and the Cowboys at right now. Like, and I don't know about DeMarco's side of the coin, but I think the Cowboys have checked out on him, but they just don't know how to break it to him yet.
Well, based on that offer, I guess they're giving DeMarco, they've found a way to tell him, hey, we're not that interested in you.
Like, DeMarco, they're just not that into you.
No. I don't see him going back to Dallas at all.
No. Me neither. And but Philly would be interesting. Philly would be very intriguing. But, yeah, so those are – and this is just the opening salvo, if you will, of free agency and all these moves. So it should be an interesting draft and an interesting season to follow.
And we didn't even touch on all the retirements this week.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's in the water. We talked about Patrick Willis. Jake Locker retired. Who's the other guy that retired?
The linebacker in Pittsburgh.
Jason World.
Yeah.
Yep, Jason World is like, wow. Like, it's a violent sport, obviously, and if your heart is not 100% in it, you don't want to be in it because you can get hurt. But, yeah, I think the Locker one really surprised me.
Did you see his quote?
No, what did he say?
Basically, he said, in simple terms, I'm not good enough to be in this league. He said it a lot fancier to make himself look better, but that was the gist of it. Was he's not that good.
Well, you know what you do when you're not that good, Marcus.
What's that?
You keep trying, and you get on teams, and you might have a miraculous playoff run, and then you might get shipped off to New England and shipped off to New York and be a part of some clown show, but you keep trying. Tim Tebow, who I missed at the Veterans, what was it, the Veteran Training Camp or whatever? The Veteran Combine? Like, Tebow was not a part of it.
You know why? It's not that good.
You know what, Marcus? There's a lot of quarterbacks that aren't that good collecting them checks out here in these streets. Ryan Lindley, Geno Smith. Hey. Don't make me start calling people out.
That's now backup quarterback Geno Smith to you. Jets got themselves a new quarterback.
Yeah. Enjoy Ryan Fitzpatrick.
A Harvard man. He's smart.
He might have gone to Harvard, but he's been playing like Brown lately. Whoa.
Ooh.
That's it. That's the out point. That's wow. The out point. I can't do better than that. Oh, that was slamming the jam, but that was pretty fun. We might have to bring that back anytime we get some transactions.
Maybe for the draft.
Yeah, we'll do slamming the jam for the draft. I like that game. So thank you to 103 Jams for that inspiration. But you played well, Marcus, and I think that you won, and I've got a prize for you.
What's that?
I'm going to give you the next segment off.
All right.
So you can kick your feet up, and we'll see you back in segment 4. But for everybody else, I'm going to be back next with the Ringside Rap and our very special guest, former WWE head writer, and he's also a talented television and film producer, director, and writer, and he's a friend of the program, Alex Greenfield. So stick and stay, because more Kings of Sport is on the way.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Bingo!
And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. You are hearing that music, so you know what time it is. It is the time each and every week for our Ringside Wrap. It is the segment where we take a look at what's going on in the world of professional wrestling, and our Road to WrestleMania series rolls on, but it looks like we've lost one of the co-pilots. Marcus Vandenberg is not here, so hopefully he will be back for segment 4, but we're not going to let that stop the show. We've got a great guest this week. He is somebody that I've been waiting to talk to on this program for a while. He's a former head writer for the World Wrestling Entertainment Company. He is somebody that I find very, very intriguing. So we're going to get into some great conversation in and outside of the world of wrestling. But without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Kings of Sport. Alex Greenfield, what's going on, brother?
Oh, man, thank you so much for having me on, Nate. Like, I've been... Is this, other than, like, Pollock's year-end shows, is this the first show we've actually done live together?
I believe so. We've always had kind of this...
Like, we've been on the same show, like, a million times. I listen to you every week, and we've never gotten to actually do the show together. So I'm super psyched. This is going to be a blast.
It's almost like good booking. Like, somebody kept us apart for a while, kept us on separate brands, and then we finally get the blow-off tonight.
I know. It's just like Survivor Series 2005. I feel like I'm back at WWE watching Snot come out of Vince's nose backstage.
Well, before we talk wrestling real quick, because I talk a lot about my personal stuff on this show, and something I saw on your Twitter, and we talked about a little bit real quick before we came on tonight, is you're in the process of quitting smoking, which is something that I'm working on myself. How's that going for you, man?
Dude, it's freaking brutal. I don't know where we are on cussing on this show.
You can certainly cuss, especially if you're deprived of nicotine.
Yeah, no. It is fucking brutal, man. I quit for 2 years back in 1999, basically 1999 through a little bit after 9/11, actually. though they weren't related at all. And I went back to it. So I know from how hard quitting smoking is. And I'll tell you, man, I had a one of the many things I do some sports production work. And I was out in Las Vegas, Nevada, a couple of weeks ago doing some shooting for stuff that I can't really talk about. But,
all right.
Which not a great mystery, just a non-disclosure agreement. It's not anything that anybody would really be interested in. But we were out there shooting, and we got back to the hotel about 1 a.m, and it was one of these hotels in Henderson where there was smoking inside. And like, I'm a regular smoker, and I had been smoking a lot recently, and I went downstairs, and there was this old dude at one of the one-armed bandits, or, you know, press buttons now, but one of the slots. And he had an oxygen tank and, like, a cannula, you know, the one that goes in his nose.
Yeah.
And motherfucker took that off, lit up a cigarette, and just sat there with it between his lips, smoking, playing
wow.
this one-armed bandit. And I was like, and it was just like a switch went off in my head. I was like, I'm 42 years old, man. I can't do this to myself anymore. So I just stopped cold turkey at 1:06 in the morning 2 weeks ago, Thursday morning.
Oh, wow. Well, that was going to be my next question. Did you quit cold turkey, or did you use any of the intermediary methods?
I've tried them all, dude. I tried switching over to vaping. I tried the patch a few years ago. I tried the gum way, way back in the day when it was first coming out, like years and years ago. None of that's worked. And the time that I quit for 2.5 years, a little more than 2 years, that was a cold turkey quit. And another time I quit for about 6 months, and it was a cold turkey quit. So I did that, and here's news for the world. The only stop smoking aid I'm using is actually an antidepressant called Wellbutrin that my doctor has put me on, because apparently one of its secondary label uses is in nicotine cessation. It apparently lessens cravings. And I'll tell you what, like, about 48 hours after I started taking it, and it's always, you know, causation or coincidence, right?
Yeah.
There's no way of telling for sure. But the cravings really went down after that. So I'm on a 12-week cycle of this stuff. God, I feel like I'm talking about gas. I'm on a 12-week cycle. And hopefully by the time that's over, I'll have broken all of the habitual stuff in addition to the addiction. And that'll be it for cigarettes and greeny. I still smoke other things, but nicotine and tobacco, not so much.
Okay, yeah, because right now I'm doing the e-cigs in part because I want to be like Stephen Dorff and get my freedom back and walk on the beach with my damn shirt off. But it's not easy, man. It's not easy.
No. Deacon Frost wants you to smoke. I get it.
But yeah, that is one of my goals for this year, to finally quit. I'm not a heavy smoker, but I definitely, like, I'm 37 right now, so it's like, yeah, I don't want to be the old guy hanging on too long.
But no, yeah. no, definitely not.
So I had a good run with cigarettes, so it's time to step aside.
Oh no, I had, like, I mean, it's one of the weirdest things. When I was sitting and talking with my doctor, he's like, the toughest thing, he's a smart guy, and he was like, the toughest thing you have to deal with is seeing yourself as not a smoker. And I gotta tell you, man, that's really tough. Like, when it is very much a part of my self-image. I mean, freaking Mick Foley, when I worked at WWE, called me Smoking Al. That was his nickname for me, because I always had a fucking cigarette. And it's tough to get that out of your self-image. So it's like, you know, not to sound all hippy-dippy about it, but it's an interesting journey just watching myself. Like, I can tell when I'm driving through town places where I lit cigarettes, because I always get, like, there's this one junction on the interstate where I must have always lit a cigarette.
Right.
And I get the worst craving right there. It's weird at what we do to our own bodies, man.
Wow, that is crazy. But I do wish you the best of luck on that. But let's switch gears right now and go from Steven Dorff with his shirt off on the beach to a bunch of other shirtless dudes and talk about your former employer as they get closer to their biggest event on the calendar, WrestleMania, of course. First of all, what's your current level of consumption when it comes to not just the WWE, but wrestling in general?
It's a real bummer because there's some wrestling that I'm really into, or even a couple of weeks ago, was more into than I am now. I'm kind of on a wrestling downturn. Like, I like watching NJPW on Access. I think, Morrow and Barnett just do a great job, and it's really fun, and I just sort of stopped watching, and the same thing happened with Lucha Underground, and I watched the first 3 or 4 weeks of Impact after it moved and just sort of drifted away from it. And I think I'm just sort of, I think any longtime fan, and I've been a fan since I was, 9 years old, so coming up on what, like 30 years, more than 30 years. I go through phases where I'm not super into wrestling, and I think it started with sort of the last year of CM Punk and the various failures in the Daniel Bryan build and all of that stuff. I've just kind of gotten where sitting and watching 3 hours of Raw, the pleasure of being snarky about it on Twitter is no longer worth just the tediousness of watching a show that I just right now, man, I legitimately am not enjoying it. And that's a bummer to say, like, and you get a lot of heat, with people who are like, oh, you're a bitter ex-writer or whatever. I wanna love wrestling, man. Like, it's been one of my chief hobbies, at least, and for a long time, my career, for a long time. And it's such a bummer when I'm not excited about watching it. But the last thing I watched that really excited me was the New Japan Wrestle Kingdom. And I really, really loved it. And I've barely watched wrestling since. I think I've watched 1 or 2 episodes of Raw. And I watched the shortened Hulu Raw so we could talk intelligently about it tonight. But otherwise, I don't think I ever would have watched it. I would have found the Heyman promo because I think Paul is... I think in 20 years, what we'll be arguing about is whether he's the best promo of all time or not. And it'll be him and maybe one other person, maybe The Rock at his best, right? He's just brilliant, and he was brilliant on that show, and nothing else worked. And weirdly, it got Brock over as a babyface, which I don't think is the idea. Everything about the build to WrestleMania this year, the road to WrestleMania is filled with potholes.
I would agree, and let's talk about that main event, but real quick, just an aside, I'm no psychiatrist or psychologist, but I do find it interesting that your interest in wrestling decreased when you put down the cigarettes.
I know, maybe it's one of those addiction things. Maybe the antidepressant that stops your cravings has stopped my cravings for the masochism of sitting through 3 hours of Raw.
Oh, well, speaking of Raw, when you talk about that great Paul Heyman promo promoting the Lesnar Reigns main event at WrestleMania, and this has been, at least from my viewing of the WWF and the WWE, one of the more problematic builds to a main event feud, to a championship match that is going to headline WrestleMania, because, like you said, the heel, or the guy that should be the heel in this situation, comes across much more likable, and that's a funny thing to say about a guy like Brock Lesnar, but he comes across as much more likable and much more accessible as a person to get behind than Roman Reigns, the guy they want the fans to cheer for. What has been your thought on the way that this has kind of progressed?
It's really a bummer, man, because I got to tell you, back last summer, I mean, more or less, like, there were some complaints about Reigns already at that point. And I was very much one of the defenders all the way up until the hernia injury, put him on the sideline for a couple of months. But I was actually like, yeah, I can see this as the guy. And one of the big things for me is it's very rare. My wife, I wouldn't even define her as a casual fan. She's she tolerates it because I'm into it. You know what I mean? So she doesn't actively hate wrestling.
Right.
It is only a very small number of guys, largely based on sex appeal, that she gets into. As soon as she saw Roman Reigns, she was like, oh, who's that guy? Like, and a guy who we as men like to see kick ass and women, just like to see, that's a really rare thing in wrestling. So I knew he had something back in the Shield days just from my wife's reaction. And his little sequences, like that dropkick to the apron,
yeah,
to the apron, and the Superman punch when it's not just build to the Superman punch. Like, he had some great spots. He had all the tools. And then as once he started doing those promos, even from the hospital room, that were sort of so ingratiating. And then when he comes back, the, faster than a speeding bullet. Pew! And it's like they were trying to make him a disingenuous heel. Like, I can't figure out what the logic and reasoning is. And then in contrast, you have maybe the best promo of all time representing a guy who's just a stone cold badass motherfucker in Brock Lesnar. Who are you going to support? And it's so, the biggest bummer to me is still, I think they had such a natural story in Bryan versus Lesnar. It's the classic David versus Goliath narrative. And twice now they've just pissed, you know, this potential drawing card away. I think that would have been a better show, and I think they could have promoted to Reigns better than they have. And it's just, it's, again, it's what I was saying earlier about not watching Raw, man. It's more frustrating than it's worth to have the fun of bitching about it.
I would totally agree with that. But one of the things that have been the most frustrating for me has been Randy Orton and his return. I think when he left, it was at the height of the Randy Orton memes, and he was getting as much buzz or as much excitement around him that I've seen in years. And what do they do the first time they bring him back? Hey, he's back with the guy that tried to kill him. And then they do this whole deal where he's with them, even though you know eventually he's going to turn. And then when he finally turns on a Raw this past Monday, they didn't get a big reaction, in part because, or in large part, I think, because they missed the opportunity. Like you said, they pissed away an opportunity when he first came back. His goal should have been, I'm going to kick the authorities' ass one by one. But instead, we got to play this cat and mouse game that I think the fans didn't really respond to.
I feel like you're right. And I think, I mean, it's a weird broad pattern that they're in right now. I mean, the WWF, and WWE by extension, they were the house of the babyface, right? All the way back to Vincent J. McMahon's day.
Yeah.
And all Vince's, like, he sat on the plane and told me his sort of core philosophy of booking is my guy booking. He wants the guy that everybody in every hometown can say, that's my guy. You're Hogan, you're Austin, you're Rock. You're Cena, in total fairness. Like, Cena has earned that over the last frickin' decade. And it's weird because, boy, they've dropped the ball on a bunch of baby faces recently, right? They dropped the ball on Randy exactly as you described. Like, I can't add anything to that. Like, he was hot as hell. They took him away for a movie, and you could have juggled that schedule around. It was a WWE film.
Yeah.
And then there was some injury, and then he comes back, and they do the Willie Won't deal. And it's just, that's not what people wanted. They wanted a kick-ass babyface. They wanted what they wanted with Daniel Bryan coming back and winning the Rumble. Like, fans want catharsis, and we have to go to NXT to get that, or to New Japan or whatever, because it just feels like WWE and Vince are playing a game of like, well, screw the hardcore fan who forms the core and base of our audience. We're going to go a different way. And I don't think the different way is playing to casual fans either, if you look at the overall ratings trends.
No, it's like after Survivor Series, you know, outside of Sting, the big kind of takeaway from that event was, okay, this is when they're really finally going to get behind Dolph Ziggler, and we see how well that turned out.
I know. Well, what they've done with Dolph is just, I mean, it's brutal, right? The stop starts on this guy. I mean, Wade Barrett's another one. This clusterfuck of a match with, what, Bryan and Barrett and Ziggler.
And,
like, they're pretty much 18 guys. It's going to be bigger than the frickin' Battle Royal by the time they're done with it. And it's not bringing any heat to the Intercontinental title, I don't think. That you're clearly not going to get Savage Steamboat out of these nine guys running around in the ring. It's just their approach is crazy, and I can't figure it out. I can't even figure it out trying to put on my, you know, I freaking worked there for almost 2 years. I ran SmackDown, and I just don't have any idea what's going on. And in some ways, it just sort of feels like it's one of those periods that Vince is reflexively holding on to control, and just half of the shit is just there to amuse him. And he does that sometimes, and it's really frustrating.
You know something that did not amuse me one bit from this past week's Raw, Brother Greeny?
I can think of probably quite a few things. What in this particular instance, Mr. Milton, what in this particular instance has struck your ire?
Well, anybody that's listened to the Kings of Sport or that has heard me on the Law shows knows that one of my favorite wrestlers of all time is that man called Sting. And I was so excited for this build. I think out of all the big time programs heading into WrestleMania, Sting and Triple H has probably been the most consistent program. But this past Monday, they made an effort to tell me as a viewer, tonight we're going to hear from Sting for the first time. Sting is going to speak for the first time, and we turn to this Sting promo, and it's James Earl Jones or Barry White or somebody, but I know that sure as hell wasn't Sting saying those words.
I mean, no, it was just, I found it thoroughly bizarre. I was a little spoiled on this. I listened to Review of Raw first and got Pollock and Way talking about it. So I was like, oh, my God, what is this going to sound like? So when I turn on it, I watch it on the Hulu feed today. I was just like, oh, my God, it's even more terrible than I imagined. Like, what were they thinking? And you're right, man. It was one of the best-built programs. Why did they need to have Sting talk and then not use his voice and then have him do a monologue that, like, twists history so much that it breaks your suspension of disbelief? It's like, why did he wait 15 years to take his revenge? Like, there's so many questions.
Well, and according to, I guess
no,
I was
it's
reading.
Troubling, and I'm with you. I love Sting. It's a bummer, man.
Yeah. And I was reading Dave Meltzer, so, you know, you can take Meltzer's report with a grain of salt, but apparently he talked to some folks and within the company, and I guess the thinking was either A, they wanted to make a reference to Sting's, quote, Black Scorpion character, which was never a character that Sting himself portrayed.
No, or, that wasn't Sting.
That was
and
right.
It turned into Flair in the worst angle ever.
Or the other explanation that Meltzer said he received was they didn't have faith in Sting's ability to cut his own promo, which if anybody's watched TNA over the past 5 years, which I know a lot of people haven't, but if you have, one of the best things in TNA was probably Sting's promos.
Yes. Sting improved remarkably. And here's the thing, dude. Like, I grew up in the same place you did. I grew up in Atlanta in the 80s and 90s. Sting was a good promo back in the day. Not great. He wasn't a Flair promo. But in terms of a white meat fucking babyface promo, Sting was never terrible. Not at all.
No.
And, dude, he didn't need to cut one single promo. He didn't need to cut a promo.
Yep. Like I was thinking the moment we would get
a bat and a fly entrance.
Yeah, and I was thinking the whole time we would not hear Sting talk in the WWE until the Raw after WrestleMania, after he wins the match.
I thought exactly the same thing. I totally agree with you, and that's exactly what I thought. And I thought that would be an all but retirement speech.
Yeah, pretty
and
much.
Then you get one more match next year, probably the Taker match, right?
That's what I was thinking. And if they weren't able to do a straight up one-on-one, you know, do something where Taker shows up and they kind of nod at each other. And then next year they kind of both ride off into the sunset in a tag match of some sorts.
I hear you on the tag thing. And that's an interesting idea because then they both go out winning, right?
Yeah.
I like the idea of them, you know, that last showdown in Texas where they both kind of got their start.
That's a good point, yeah.
Like that last showdown between the last two gunslingers of a bygone era. And I know that's the same program they ran with Hunter. It just Hunter wasn't the guy for it. I feel like that could still be a really, really special, special match. And I don't know who goes over. I think they have to kill each other in the ring. They have to disappear into white light at the end. They have to ride off into the sunset on horses.
We'll get that, what was it, the end of Rocky III, the freeze frame with Apollo and Rocky, and that'll just be how Sting Taker ends.
Yep.
But I got one last wrestling question before we get into some other stuff real quick. But this would be the point of the show where Marcus would tap me on the shoulder and say, don't say something that could get you fired. But since Marcus isn't here, I'm going to go ahead and ask this question anyway, because I was doing some research, Brother Greeny, and I looked at your LinkedIn page, and one of the things you talked about under the WWE portion of your resume is when you were in charge of SmackDown, you attained major ratings increases, especially with Latino and African-American viewers. And my question
is... Yes, we did, and I am fucking proud of that.
What the hell are they doing with the brothers now?
Say that again?
What the hell are they doing with the brothers now? Why is it either an angry black guy or a shuck and jive?
Yeah, I mean, now we are talking in the... Like, in a legit way, I am always really hesitant when race and WWE comes up on programs to talk about anecdotes that I know and saw for myself, because it is a very litigious company, and that is something they do not fuck around with, right?
Right.
So you can call me a chicken shit if you want to, but I can't go into everything. If there was ever a big class action case and I were called before a court, I could say interesting things. but it killed me. And what kills me is I absolutely, with empirical evidence, can tell you that when you have Mark Henry and Rey Mysterio and King Booker up at the top of your card, you can draw in eyeballs that do not normally watch professional wrestling. I mean, it worked for us.
So why do you think, and again, I'm not asking you to go into anything that might get you a call from some people, but why do you think, and let's take this outside of the WWE, let's go to wrestling in general. Like outside, one of the things I really like about TNA is that they're giving guys like MVP and Lashley a chance. But why do you feel that so few companies are willing to go with minority characters in major roles?
I mean, it's a, so few companies. I mean, in my opinion, I think there are vestiges of wrestling's, highly racial past, that still exist within the business, and that it is possible that a person, if you were to say, propose a program propose as your championship program, a black man against a black man, that might say, well, that's a gimmick on a gimmick, isn't it?
Wow.
hypothetically, statements like that could be made. And it's really, it makes me tear my hair out, and I'm a generation older than a lot of the guys who are writing now, and I think I know one writer who's currently on the team, but I have a guess that they are, as I was, you know, guys in their early 30s at the latest, mostly guys in their 20s, and it's got to really get under their skin, because it's like walking into a different world, man. And you look at what, you know, Lashley looks like a killer. MVP is cutting the best promos of his career.
Yeah.
Like, they, you know, King too. Like they, and here's the thing that's really great about it. They only in the most subtle way refer to themselves, well, I mean, Lashley's out now, but refer to themselves as a black faction in any way.
Right.
It was all subtextual. It was really good work, and props and hats off to the TNA guys. because, you know, we'd come up with some pretty good shit, and it was a fight every week with brown and black people, man. And it's and you know, I say this as, you know, the lily whitest Jewish guy you could ever see, but like, separate and apart from ethical whiteness or whatever, it's money that's being left on the table.
Yep.
Because you're alienating an audience that wants to buy your shit.
Yeah, there's a reason Tyler Perry is very successful, and it's because he caters to an audience that a lot of times is overlooked.
Yep. I mean, you know that a lot of my career outside of wrestling is working in horror. And one of the, and I've had this conversation with two or three sort of major horror distributors in talking about projects, and especially talking about casting in projects. The horror audience, like, go to a horror movie at a Magic Johnson Theater. And it is the best experience you will ever have watching a movie. the urban audience, I mean, you know, right? Like, the,
yep,
Midtown 8 in Atlanta, back before it was an art theater, was this just action theater in the middle of the city. And, you know, I remember, you know, we'd go in there and you'd see a Halloween sequel or whatever. And that audience was engaged with horror. And I think a lot of people have gotten it wrong. A lot of people have created horror films, you know, like Tales from the Hood and things like that, that are so blaxploitation that they miss the mark.
Yep.
But just casting it like casting horror movies like America looks right now, and you're tapping into an audience that really wants to see themselves on the screen and will really interact with it. And a good portion of the horror movie audience is the African Americans and Latinos already, just built that way.
Yep, and I'm glad that you took it in this direction, because that was where I was going to go next. I think one of the first interactions that you and I ever had on Twitter was talking about something. It was either a horror movie or a ghost story or something, and I was like, man, white people really love ghosts. And then Alex Greenfield hit me back, and he was like, it's not just white folks, Nate. Everybody loves ghosts. And he sent me like a little quick thing in terms of like all cultures, and there's ghost stories in all sorts of backgrounds and ethnicities. And I was like, oh, that was the first time I wanted to get you on the show, but schedules never worked out, because I was like, I want to have this ghost discussion. But yeah, that is something that, you know, you're a writer, a producer, you've done a lot of work in film and TV. And the other part of the coin that I find so interesting is, you know, the relationship to the occult and the ghostly world, the spiritual realm, that, you know, comes from your background with your father. You know, for those that don't know about that, can you tell them a little bit about that and how you got interested in that?
Yeah, dude. My dad is a guy named Alan Greenfield, who is, I grew up hunting ghosts and UFOs with my dad. Apparently, I mean, it's before I can remember, obviously, but apparently there was a great UFO wave in northern Florida and southern Georgia in 1973, and I was apparently in one of those, like, hippie papoose carriers on my dad's chest, walking through these fields where people had seen UFOs, like, with Geiger counters. So that's how I grew up. Like, the old, on Peachtree Street, you're old enough to remember the old Brookwood Hotel, this,
yes,
big, you know, scary sort of overlook hotel style relic that was on Peachtree Road in Atlanta for years and years. And I guess there were property fights over it. So anyway, it just stood there, and there were ghost stories dating back to the Civil War, and my dad and his stripper girlfriend and his buddy Sam and me, you know, this 8-year-old kid, were breaking into the Brookwood Hotel and walking around the rooms and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I've been captivated by the supernatural and, you know, Stephen King stories and H.P. Lovecraft and all of that. I was a real little kid. I mean, it was sort of my background. It's no surprise that I would go into writing horror movies, because, dude, I was probably 4 years old when I saw The Exorcist the first time.
Oh, wow.
Like, clearly scarring me for life. But that's how I make my living now. And doing terrible bits with The Undertaker when I worked at WWE.
Yeah. Well, and this is the part of the conversation that I wanted to have back then when we had the little quick exchange on Twitter, because I will concede the point, and it's very rare that I concede points that all cultures are interested in the spiritual realm in some way, shape, or fashion. But when it comes to ghost hunting, especially in the United States, I'm asking you, you know, to speak on behalf of all white folks everywhere, Alex. I know it's a tough position.
As I am duly authorized to do.
Why y'all always chasing after ghosts, man? There's so many ghost shows on TV. There's so many films about, you know, just a group of people going in with a camera and the little recorders and all the equipment. Like, why are you looking for ghosts, man? Why can't you just leave the ghosts alone?
I think it goes to a real deep brain place. I think that cultures, and you're absolutely right, sort of Western European white Caucasian culture is particularly interested in ghosts, in stories, in the broadest sense, in stories about people who have died and cannot go on to whatever the next thing is. And I think it's some deep-seated guilt. Like, there's always this sense, and if you look deeply at just about any ghost story, it always comes down to you've got to find the bones, right? Like, you've got to find the bones and let the spirit go.
Yep.
They're all about guilt. And I think this, and there is sort of a current obsession, because you've got shows like Ghost Hunters, and, you know, God knows, my dad's been on History Decoded, talking about Masonic conspiracies in New York City or whatever. There is a real desire to confront our guilt in white culture, and I think that's where our obsession with ghost stories is born. Because we got a lot to feel guilty about.
I wasn't going to say it, but... if this was the nightly show, I'd give you a sticker for keeping it 100. real quick, let's delve into some of your other work. You know, I'm just kind of glancing over your IMDb page and a lot of your different credits. One of the projects that you worked on that I found interesting was a project called Street Warrior. I was a little bit disappointed that it wasn't about Jim Helwig going to the hood, though.
That would be great, right?
That would have been a great project.
Do you know Court Bauer from MLW?
Yes, we've had him on the show. He, as a matter of fact, he was one of our first guests on the Kings of Sport.
Nice. Court and I worked years ago. Court found the gig with Warrior on this. Hopefully I'm okay to say all of this, but with Warrior on trying to set up an animated series, sort of imagine kind of a, in terms of both the animation and the storytelling, sort of throwback to Masters of the Universe, like late 80s animation style show about sort of Discworld with the Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, wow.
But really interesting cat. Yeah, that would have worked for him.
Yeah, that would have been really cause I don't know if you watch a lot of Adult Swim now, but I would say one of my favorite shows would have to be that Mike Tyson show, because I just think it's so weird and random, but it works.
I've only seen clips of it, and it looks really good. I'm so far behind, dude. I'm like on season 3 of the Boondocks at this point. Way behind.
Spoiler alert! I think if you. If you don't care, if you're not a completionist, I'd stop at the end of season 3, because season 4 was okay, it was funny, but it just wasn't the same without Aaron Magruder.
Oh no, that's a bummer to hear. Because I'm really loving, like, it's some really daring shit, like, from the word go.
Yeah, it was I would say the Boondocks, as well as the Venture Brothers, for different reasons. Those are probably two of my favorite shows that Adult Swim has ever, you know, given the green light to. Because I think, you know, the Boondocks just tackled stuff head on. And not just, you know, from a perspective of, hey, white folks, look at this. But also, hey, black folks, look at this. You know, some of the stuff with Snake Meaner and, you know, just all of that stuff. It was really...
Yeah. No. The satire, I mean, it sort of reminds me of Chappelle's Show back in the day.
Yeah.
The satire is a 360, machine gun. Just like mowing us all down. And that's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the Boondocks. But let's go from shows that have ceased production to what's going on in the future. What's coming up for one Alex Greenfield? Are you working on some things that you can perhaps let the audience know about, or is it all hush-hush?
Things are going pretty freaking great right now, which is not the usual. Well, usually it's like, I'm freelancing, I'm really looking for my next gig. If anybody knows anybody, help me. And this time I can actually report good stuff. No, I got a horror movie. I had two TV movies and direct-to-video movies come out in December. And, God, when did Cookie Monster come out? Jeez. Cookie Monster and this Earthquake movie both came out in, like, December and January, just like one after the other, which is super cool. I've got a movie called The Abduction of Jocelyn Shaker, a sort of Taken type thriller that is getting ready to film in Colombia later this month.
Oh wow!
That I just received the production bonus on, which is the important part. But that's getting shot down in Colombia. I believe it's going to air in America on, get this, the Lifetime channel, which is awesome. And it's a Women in Jeopardy.
is Meredith Baxter Burney a part of the project?
No, it's got to be someone younger than that. It's a bummer. I was hoping for Meredith Baxter Burney, obviously. So I've got that. I've got this great little horror movie, indie horror movie that was actually shot last year, but it's just finishing post-production, and they're shopping it around for distribution right now, called The Sand, which is premiering at a bunch of film festivals over the next few months. And I've got the one project I can't tell anyone about, but it looks like I'm about to sign the contract for something that wrestling fans will actually be interested in, which is pretty cool.
Okay. Very cool. So where can our listeners reach out to you if they want to keep up with what you got going on and find out the latest thoughts from one Alex Greenfield?
You can go to @AlexBGreenfield on Twitter and give me hell there.
All right. Sounds good. Appreciate you coming on the show, man. It's been something, like I said, that Marcus and I have wanted to have you on for a while, and hopefully... maybe next time when you come back, Marcus will actually show up.
No, I was going to say, maybe Marcus and Way can go do a podcast together. That'll be all the guys who just avoid me online. It's fantastic.
Well, again, you can hear Alex on MLW Radio, as well as, he's a frequent contributor to the law programs with our good friends John Pollock and Wei Ting. And now he has made his debut on the Kings of Sports. So we appreciate you coming on, man. And best of luck quitting the nicotine.
Thank you very much. Thanks, man.
No problem. That's Alex Greenfield. I was about to say we are the Kings of Sports, but there's only one of us here. So I'm Nate Milton, and hopefully I'll find Marcus just in time for next segment. More Kings of Sports right after this.
Everybody buzzing around me. Could it be the way that the verses sounding came up on the ghetto boys and the underground king? Toys I had a prone, call it pretty brown thing. Pink looked like blue beer when the sun was shining. Known to keep a bad bitch, no niggas beside me. Index finger on the trigger case niggas is clowning. Not to flex, but to protect my neck like the Wu-Tang. Self-preservation is the rule when you do aim. Or get in something more sinister. You gotta be the finisher. Make it so the doctors, they can't replenish him. Or bring him back to life, back to reality. Gonna get on some hoes, leave it alone. Triple OG status, 8 town, very own. Now party people in the club, it's time to cut a rug. And load the beats up in the sky, just for the shots of bugs. I'm double fisted and you empty, you can grab a club. Boy, stop, I'm just playing, let me play. Now party people in the club, it's time to cut a rug. And load the beats up in the sky, just for the shots of bugs. I'm double fisted and you empty, you can grab a club. Boy, stop.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, a proud member of the High Voltage Radio Network. You can check out High Voltage Radio and their fine family of podcasts at highvoltageradio.com. It is segment four. Marcus Vandenberg is back in the building, and he's just in time to talk about three stories that are just unbelievable. The ratchetness is strong within these stories. So, Marcus, let's not waste any time. What you got first for segment four?
First up is a name that our Caucasian brothers and sisters might not know. Her name is Angie Stone. She's a R&B singer of a certain age. And, I didn't realize how old she was until I read the story. She's 52.
Really?
Or 53, excuse me.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah, so... but yes, Angie Stone was arrested this week.
Uh-oh.
After an incident with her daughter. Now, you're probably thinking, all right, maybe it's a young child. Maybe she just, you know, she pulled Agent Peterson. She got reckless and, you know, beat her a little too hard. Nope. Her daughter is 30. And Angie Stone allegedly struck her 30-year-old daughter with a metal stand and knocked out her front teeth.
What?
Yeah. According to the Cobb County Police Report, Angie Stone and Diamond Stone, or Angie Stone said Diamond Stone hit her in the face with closed fist first. Diamond Stone and Blondie Chisholm, a family friend who witnessed the Monday night altercation, told police they were not sure who threw the first blow. The spat, according to Diamond Stone, started when Angie Stone entered her daughter's room, demanded that she clean it up, and ordered her to control her children, who were running around the senior's Rogers Lake Road home, half naked.
Wow.
So let's back up here.
Yeah.
Diamond Stone, living at home. Cool, whatever. That's fine. The fact that Angie Stone's coming in her room talking about clean up your room at 30 is like, really? Nate, are your parents coming into your room talking about, hey, clean up your room, Nate?
Yeah, you know, I had to move back home because of certain circumstances. But yeah, like when I, as the adult child, moved back at home, they, as my adult parents, like we never got to a situation where it was like, you know, clean your room or, you know, you eat your dinner before you have dessert. Like, no, like we all grown, you know, the dynamic should change as you get older.
You would think so. We have Grandma Angie Stone trying to discipline not only her daughter, but now her grandkids who are half naked. Continue on. Miss Diamond Stone then went on to state that Miss Angie Stone started getting in her face, telling her she needed to leave because she's tired of her, police said in the report. Diamond Stone then stated her and Angie Stone started to argue, and that's when a physical altercation started to occur.
Wow.
Angie's denying that she hit her daughter with a metal stand. There are photos of Diamond Stone's mouth and it was hit with a metal stand. So, wow. This is something.
Yeah, it is very, like, first of all, you know, domestic violence, never cool. You know, get that out of the way so we can make jokes. But, oh, like, there's, I guess it doesn't matter, Marcus, how much money you have, how many awards critically that you won. Ratchet is ratchet, ghetto is ghetto.
Yeah, this would fall under the Ratchet and Ghetto category.
Like did Angie Stone kick down the door and was like, I'm your mother, no other. Angie Stone, like, all jokes aside, Marcus, like, for, I'd say from like 99 to the early to mid 2000s, like, she had some songs, man.
She did. And then she just sort of fell off.
Was probably too busy disciplining her daughter.
Her daughter did put out a statement.
Okay, what did Diamond have to say?
Let me try to read this here. Let me adjust my reading level to attempt grader. Hold on.
Make sure your reading level's on fleek.
Yeah, on fleek. People are so quick to pass judgment but never really know the full story. Never uphold people in wrong no matter who they are. I'm crushed, but I ain't dead. So for the people that praise, quote-unquote, her, keep right on. Just know that it ain't over. You so big and bad, but had to use a weapon on me in a fight that you started. You giggled on the inside because you thought I was going to jail too? Wrong. I'm sick of putting up these fronts, and because you took shit to another level, I will too. I love all my family, but I cannot take any more abuse, so I'm separating myself from it all. I pray God heals us from this, but from where I sit, there is no turning back, because if you ain't with me, you're against me. You so worried about the media and the press, but I promise you this, I will not rest until my story is heard.
Wow. So, is this a real story, Marcus, or did you just sneak in a synopsis from this week's Empire and try to fool me?
This is a legit story.
Like, she cut a promo on her mom.
She did.
Like, this isn't over. You tried to crush me, but I'm still standing, brother.
But in 3 weeks at, insert Georgia name here.
At Ratchet Mania.
Yeah.
What you gonna do when me and your half-naked grandkids run out on you? Oh, this is just terrible. This is terrible. Isn't she on, isn't Angie Stone on like some reality show now? Like, isn't that her new career move?
She was on R&B Divas Atlanta.
Okay. Yeah, I've never watched one episode of any of the R&B Divas franchises.
Same here.
So I don't know like what her role is. 'Cause you know, every reality show, like, they got to cast somebody in a different role. Like, you're either the wise older woman, or you the crazy bitch, or you the woman inside here sleeping with everybody's husbands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, so I wonder what Angie Stone's role is. She the one going around starting fights and throwing drinks at people?
UFC fighter at this point.
Oh, I love that statement though. You so big and bad, but you had to hit me with a weapon. Like, let's not bury the lead, like you said, Marcus. Angie Stone, how old did you say she was?
53.
The daughter, 30. You grown women with little children in the midst of all this.
I wonder what the grandchildren think about this.
Like, what are they, team grandma or team mama?
Mm-hmm.
I would suspect, since grandma has more money, they probably on team grandma.
I'm guessing that the grandkids won't be seeing grandma anytime soon, though.
No, I don't think so.
By the way, Angie Stone did the theme song to Girlfriends.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
She going to make a remix on, like, Angie Stone, what you going to hit Diamond with next? My right hand. Oh, Angie Stone, like, what's that song? The first song she ever had, like, well, not the first song she ever had, but like the first one that got popular. You remember No More Rain?
Oh, and this, oh.
Yeah.
That song still goes.
Yeah, that was my jam back in the day. Like, she's actually a talented singer, but yeah, this is just trifling.
Damn, I have to listen to that song after the show now.
Yeah, and it'll give a whole new perspective on these tracks.
But my sunshine is gone.
Like, you, You'll be like before when you heard it, it was uplifting and positive. Now all you're going to be able to picture in your mind is Angie Stone going after her daughter with a weapon because she's so big and bad.
My sunshine has come and I'm all cried out. Well, her daughter's all cried out too.
And there's no more rain in this cloud.
Here's the lyrics. There's no hiding place when someone has hurt you. It's written on your face and it reads broken spirit, lost and confused. Empty, scared, used and abused, a fool. Wow. Little did we know, 1989, that Angie was writing a song about her daughter.
That was the first promo. That was the original promo. Oh, well, that's one relationship that is definitely on the rocks, Marcus. This week we also learned about another relationship that may be, if not on the rocks, heading towards the cliff as we speak.
What's that?
Well, Marcus, what happened is Andy Murray was on the British Davis Cup team, and his teammate, Dominic Inglot is the gentleman's name. And they had just won a Davis Cup match and everybody's celebrating. And the reporter goes up to Andy Murray and she's like, "Oh, Andy, that was a great game. What do you think about your team's performance?" And he was like, "Well, you know, we're going to have fun. And then it was a great victory and we're going to go celebrate." And she's like, "Oh, you guys are going to go out on the town." And he's like, "Well, I don't know. I can't speak for myself. But Damo, he's got a hot little girlfriend on the go." And everybody's laughing, having a good time. And the reporter's like, "Well, what's your girlfriend's name, Dominic?" And he ain't really saying nothing, but everybody, all the dudes is laughing. And then Andy's like, "Come on, Damo, don't leave me hanging, man. Tell her what it is, Dom." And he's like, "Well, this is a little bit embarrassing because I actually have a girlfriend who's probably going to see this back home."
Oh no.
And you can just see Andy Murray just kind of like, oh, he just kind of looks down and hides his face in shame, and the guys are laughing. And Inglot came out later on Twitter and he was like, "You know, it was all just a joke. It was funny banter. I don't have a girl on the side, but come on, bro."
Oh.
Like, I hope it's not true, but come on, man. Like, the reaction, if you see the video, Marcus, that's not a joke reaction. Either he is the greatest actor this side of Tom Hanks, or he just got busted on international television.
Oh, that's not good. Andy.
Like, just as a man, like man code, like, you know, it's granted, you know, we're not advocating infidelity here on the Kings of Sport.
No.
But, however, if you know your boy is doing something shady on the side, he got a side chick or what have you, as a friend, you have an obligation not to put him out there on Front Street.
Yes. Even if you're friends with the female, you need to handle that off camera.
Yeah, and especially if you're friends with the female, like, you can't tell her that her man is cheating, because that's just going to put you in a, like, both people are going to hate you now.
Well, it depends if you're friends first with the female or the guy.
That's a valid point. Are you speaking from experience?
No.
Okay, I have not, well, let's just say I have not been in the position where I've had to tell, but I have been in the position where one of my boys has perhaps stepped on out, but I ain't going to put his name out there. And knowing his girlfriend, like, it's not my obligation. You know, I'm not condoning what he's doing, but at the same time, I'm not going to step into that briar patch.
Yeah, no, I have advised a friend not to date a friend of mine. A friend that I knew longer before my other friend, and I don't think she appreciated that, but I was just looking out for her. But yeah, I mean, other than that, no, I've never been in a situation.
Yeah, so like this Andy Murray, great tennis player, but not such a great wingman. Like, you got to keep that on the low.
On the low, low.
And we're not talking about Jones.
No.
Oh, but Marcus, I think I may have saved the best story for last.
All right.
All right. You are aware of former WWE star and former TNA star Lisa Marie Verone, better known as Tara or Victoria?
I do.
Okay, you aware that she owned an establishment in Chicago, a pizza restaurant called the Squared Circle?
Yep.
Okay, Marcus. Have you seen the TMZ footage of the Squared Circle and the attempted robbery that occurred this past week?
I have not, no.
Okay, well, what happened was there was a armed assailant that came in and tried to rob the Squared Circle. And Lisa Marie Verone's husband, who's a co-owner of the establishment, he basically tackled the guy and brought him down and body slammed the guy. And then it was on TMZ. And so, you know, she was all proud and she's like, you know, that's Lee. That's what he does. You know, he's a great guy. And he used to be a bouncer when he was younger, so that punk should have known better than to come in and try to rob us. Mm-hmm. So far, it's a pretty good story. Nice feel-good story. It's you know, not a big story yet, Marcus, is it?
No, not yet, but it's not a bad story.
No, not a bad story. But what takes this story from just a kind of minuscule TMZ story to primetime segment four fodder is what happened after Lisa Marie Verone took a quicker look at the footage.
Oh no, did she recognize who robbed the place?
No, Marcus, even worse.
Oh wait, was her husband up to no good?
Well, here's what happened, Marcus. Because I follow Lisa Marie Verone on Twitter. And she has been going ham on Twitter all night long. And she's like, hey, guys, you know what my favorite part of the footage of TMZ was? It's finding out that the girl that had an affair with my husband still works at the Squared Circle.
Oh.
Like when the robber first comes in, he passes the bar.
Uh-huh.
And I guess the girl working the bar had an affair with her husband, Lee. And I guess she thought that Lee fired her. But apparently she still is employed by the Squared Circle.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, I mean, how often is she going to the place? She hasn't been by in months to realize that this woman is still there? What kind of...
I don't know. Like, because I know she hosts, like, the Monday Night Raw parties and stuff like that, the pay-per-views and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how active she is day-to-day. But from what I gather, Lee is, like, the day-to-day manager of the establishment. So I don't know if Lee knows when she's coming and just schedules this chick at other times.
Which would be smart.
Yes, which would be smart. But it didn't stop there, Marcus, because apparently she packed up her stuff from Chicago and moved out to California.
All this happened this week?
This happened this week. And the tweets, she's like, hey, gang, don't feel obligated to tip the waitress tonight at the Squared Circle. Thank you for your support. Be sure to thank Liz on your way out of the Squared Circle. She's the reason I moved to California and the reason why we are selling the restaurant.
Whoa.
Yes. Son. Oh, man. And it does not stop there, Marcus. It does not stop there. It is one person tweeted to her, it's a bummer that a homewrecker has to ruin it for all of us wrestling fans. And Lisa Marie Verone's reply was, yep, you can all thank Liz Del Santos.
Oof.
And link to the girl's Twitter.
Oh, man.
Yeah, she ain't playing. What's the old saying, Marcus? Hell hath no fury.
Oh, man.
She is not playing.
Yes. Wow, so the restaurant's closing.
Yep, the marriage is closing.
A guy got arrested. Wow, there's a lot in the story.
Yeah, and as a result of this, she's pulled, because I guess what part of what she did was get a lot of her wrestling friends to come to like the Monday Night Raw parties and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were planning a big WrestleMania party, and she's gotten everybody. I guess like the Dudleys were supposed to be there, and some of the former WWE divas were going to be there, and she got them all to pull out of the WrestleMania party.
Wow.
So yeah, turn out the lights, the party's over. Oh, but that is like, you thought, like, I don't know which is worse. Is the Andy Murray story worse, or is it this one?
Oh, I would say Murray, because as a guy, you gotta know better. That's like, that's the truth.
Yeah.
You gotta know better.
Not defending Lee, but if he was gonna be two-timing, at least he was trying to do it the smart way, and the only reason he got caught was because of some random robber.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I was like, she was all happy too. Like, that's how quick it changed. Like, if you look at the TMZ footage and read the accompanying article, like, she's just gushing about her man. And then she's like, wait one damn minute. She still works there?
Now, if you're the husband and you want to continue that relationship on the side, I would fire her and just do my dirt outside of work.
Yeah, he could have done that. But yeah, that's not smart at all. Like, not only did you lose your relationship, but now you're gonna lose your business, man. Like that's gonna affect your paper, Lee.
Yeah, that divorce didn't have. It's gonna affect the paper too.
Like it's hard to hold down a side chick when you gotta pay your ex-wife.
I hope it was worth it. I hope she's cute at least.
Let's see. Let's check her out real quick, Liz Dos Santos, because she, like I said, man, she put her government out there. She linked to this chick Liz's Twitter. Like, she's not playing. Like, her Twitter is. Oh, wow. I didn't even see this part. Like, apparently people had been tweeting her, asking her, because I guess she had talked about this chick before.
Oh,
and they were like, yeah. And they had seen the video and they were like, you know, is that Liz? Is that Liz? And she was like, to answer all of your questions from the video. And she came out real strong. At Dizzy Miss Liz, that's the chick's Twitter, does not work for the Squared Circle. Not as long as I own it, not after what she did. Thanks for your concern. And then apparently, I guess she went back and looked at the video and was like, yo, this chick is in my business. And she has, this chick did, Liz has not tweeted since October 10th. And she's probably been real busy sleeping with people's husbands.
Wow.
Yeah, man. Like, that is.
Remembering the tweets now.
Yeah, you seeing them now. She's not. Like, she's bartender cute, if you know what I mean, Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's not unattractive, but she's not worth risking your whole damn business and your marriage for. Like, she ain't Beyonce or nobody like that. She's not even Iggy Azalea. She's like a random, like, you know, bartender. Like, yep. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm looking at it now. Let's see.
Yeah, there's a picture of her with Victoria from January. She's like, don't I have the cutest employees? This is Liz. Aww.
Oh.
Apparently the affair must have occurred within the last couple months.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Man. Like, you could, like, you just messed up your WrestleMania payday, man. Because I'm sure that place was going to be packed.
Oh, yeah, of course. Chicago? Yeah, they love wrestling.
Yeah. Damn. So, yeah. So she is shutting down the business, shutting down the marriage, presumably. Oh, man. And shutting down Liz on Twitter.
Wow. That's segment four material all over it.
It was like when we talked about this before we recorded, like, you had no idea what this was about, but I was so ready to talk about this.
So back in California.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, like, sorry, the squared circle is closing. You can thank that home wrecker Liz.
I wonder how soon before they close.
Yeah.
Oh, Liz, they have wrestling trivia night too? Oh, damn it, Liz.
Yeah, Liz messed this up for everybody. So if you're in the Chicago area,
hurry up and go.
Yep. That's funny though. She said, don't tip your waitress. Like, wow.
Wrestling trivia. Wow. This is a great idea.
Like they've been open for a while and they've been making some money, so it's like, man.
Yeah, I've looked at this menu before. I'm not sure why I looked at the menu because I haven't been to Chicago in a minute. But I remember going to the website and checking it out to see what they offered. Damn it. maybe she'll find a new man and open one in California.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah, man, that's one bad apple can spoil a whole bunch.
Yep.
And when you got two of them and they having sex, that's a lot of bad applesauce.
Yeah.
Oh, but that, I was going to say that's a great story, but it's not really a great story.
It's a sad story, but it is a great story.
Yeah, it's sad and great at the same time. Like, it sucks for Lisa, cause she was actually doing some good. And like, as wrestling fans, like, you don't have a whole lot of places where you can go and hang out. But yeah, like I was like, we got to talk about this on segment four, because I got home from work and that was, I guess, when things were first starting to pop off.
Mm.
And I was just reading these tweets while I was getting ready for the show. And I was like, she is not stopping. Like, she gives zero fucks about this. Like, she went from 0 to 100 real quick.
Well, welcome to California, Lisa.
From I love my man to he can burn in hell and Liz can burn with him.
Yeah.
So I guess what we've learned through all of this in segment four, Marcus, is treat the people you love with respect. Don't hit them with weapons because you're so big and bad. Don't put your friends out there on Front Street if they out there having relationships on the side. And if you're married, don't sleep with other people that's not your wife or your husband.
Yeah, simple rules to live by.
Yeah, I think if we've learned anything else from this show today, you know, we can besides Jacoby Jones' nickname, the fast food, we've learned that. Treat people with respect.
Yeah.
All right, sound like Jerry Springer at the end. But be good to yourself and others. But that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Another great show in the books. Marcus Vanderberg, where can the people find you on social media? Where can they tweet at you? And I was trying to tie it into the last story, but I lost my train of thought.
Yeah, good luck.
Still reading these wonderful. Oh, here we go. If people want to tweet about a relationship that actually works, like the one you have with your fiance,
there you go.
Where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill. And thank you for the tweets about the shows each week. I do try to tweet back. And before we go, we need to discuss my new coworker, Nate.
Oh yeah. We've got a mutual friend and now a mutual. He's my coworker in a sense on Review and Impact, and now he's actually your coworker at Yahoo.
Yeah, so Brian, man, I was listening to Review and Impact, finishing up on Monday, and I got to the very end of the show, And Brian made his announcement, and I said, what? And I was like, nah. So I went in the system, and I looked him up, and there he was. Brian Metro Man. So I sent him an email, and I said, hey, coworker, what's up? And I told him I'd be out to New York whenever it warms up. So, yeah, he's we're now colleagues at Yahoo.
Okay.
Very, very weird that the odds of this happening would be...
Yeah.
Slim to none.
Yeah, very, very coincidental. But the good thing is if my budding chicken empire doesn't come to fruition, I can get a job in the mailroom with a recommendation from one of you.
Yeah, we'll hook you up. You have two Yahoo recommendations now.
Yeah, so that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah, shout out to Brian. You can hear me and Brian every week on Review and Impact. And usually it's a nice long show. So if you got a long car drive or perhaps you're moving from Chicago to, say, California, and you need something to listen to on the flight or on the drive, pop in Review and Impact. You can follow me on Twitter. In the number 8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow the show, Cospod, KOS_POD, Cospod on Twitter. And hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/ The Kings of Sport. Like the show, share the show, rate and review on iTunes and Stitcher. What else? I think that's it. I think that's all the plugs. Oh, Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com is your one-stop spot for pop culture opinions, articles, and podcasts. So head on over to Place to Be Nation. And again, shout out to the High Voltage Radio Network. And that's it. That's it. So for Marcus Vandenberg, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. Pay what you owe, Bill. Pay what you owe. Because you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's bad. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Attack like I just left.